after the flood, the population of the earth was 8 people. They were one family and they spoke the same language. Now we have many races of people and many languages. How did that happen? When Noah and his family left the ark, God told them the same thing that he had told Adam and Eve. Multiply and fill the earth with people. And Noah's sons, Shem, Ham, and Japheth, started to do exactly that, to multiply and fill the earth. Have you heard about the social phenomenon commonly described as the rebel always comes to the top? Whether in a labor union or in a kindergarten class, the rebel who has no regard for people or rules will rise to a position of leadership. The kid in class who swears and cheats, who breaks the rules, talks back to the teacher, will be looked upon by the other students as someone who is strong, someone to be respected in their childlike way, someone to be feared, and someone who is a leader. That's what happened to Adam's family. The rebel came to the top. That's what happened to Noah's family. After the flood, Noah's sons began to multiply. About 70 of their descendants are named in chapter 10, and the rebel became the leader. That set the stage for the human race to be divided into multiple language groups and into different races. What is a race of people? Everybody talks about race, race problems, but the term race is very vague. The encyclopedia says, a race is a group of people who have a fairly definite combination of physical traits. Well, based on that definition, I would say that all humanity is one race created by God in His image, the human race. Scientists admit that the cells which make up the human body are the same for all races. Science cannot distinguish between the cells of a Chinaman and the cells of an American Indian. Biologists can tell human blood from animal blood, but human blood is all the same for all the races, which is what the Apostle Paul said 2,000 years ago on Mars Hill. God made from one, or from one blood, all nations of mankind. Anthropologists divide mankind into 3 major races based on the color of skin, hair, and eyes. They use technical terms for the 3 racial classifications, but mostly they base everything on skin color. Some are lighter, some are darker, and some are just right. The common labels are white, black, and yellow. Yellow? Which must make the American Indian feel very left out. Most people get race and nationality mixed up. There is no English race, there is no German race, there is no Italian race. Europeans are all a conglomeration of several mixed races. The Nazi German spinmeisters talked a lot about the super race, the pure race, but there is no such thing. In Genesis 10, Noah's son Japheth migrated to Asia Minor and then on to Europe. Ham went to Africa and into parts of Asia. Shem and his family basically stayed where they were. The main focus of Genesis is the son Shem, because it was from his family that God chose Abraham. And God would use Abraham to establish a new nation and bring his son into the world. There was a scoundrel in Ham's line who came to the top. He became the leader. He was the rebel. His name was Nimrod. He was mighty in the earth. He was known at first for hunting. Nimrod was most everybody's hero. He had a real reputation. And he became an empire builder. He appears to be a dictator who led masses of people to defy God. Man's common language was to his advantage. You could call him King Nimrod, and he would like that. Apparently, a lot of people called him that. Nimrod got the idea that, you know, if we just settle down and dig in and stay here together and build some cities, we'll do better, which was in direct violation of what God had told them. Hero worship always overrates physical traits and physical accomplishment, and hero worship tends to always underrate moral and spiritual issues. Who's your hero? What has he done? Does he play in the NFL? Does he play for the NBA? Or Is he in this room? My hero is in this room. Nothing is too difficult for him. Nimrod's mark on the human race is amazing to me. The prophet Micah referred to that region of the world, Mesopotamia, in his letter in the Old Testament. The prophet Micah called that region the land of Nimrod, but Micah lived 12 to 15 centuries after Nimrod was there. That's amazing to me. Do we have time for one footnote? How long has mankind lived on the earth? The extravagant claims being made today are, in my mind, ridiculous beyond description. Why don't we just all admit nobody knows how long man has been on the earth? But to say 100,000 years or even 25,000 years, if so, the population growth rate would put the total into the billions and billions of people. If so, what happened to all these people? Why didn't they invent anything? Where is the evidence of their progress? Where is the evidence of their civilizations? Where are their fossil remains? I think it's time to mix a little common sense in with all the academic nonsense that we are told. In chapter 11 and the paragraph which Michelle read for us, we have a description of the second catastrophe in human affairs that occurred during the second beginning of the human race. The spreading out of mankind in chapter 10 was triggered by God's judgment on the rebellion described in chapter 11. Both chapters are dealing with the same event. God's plan was for men to multiply and fill the earth with people. So what did they do after the flood? They did the opposite of what God commanded. They found some fertile land, and they let a big game hunter talk them into building a city, staying together, and then building a skyscraper. Why'd they do that? To make a name for themselves. Why did they do that? To prevent themselves from being scattered over the face of the earth. They were united in defying God. Where did this happen? Well, in the land of Shinar, or in the land of Nimrod. Today we would call it the land of Saddam Hussein, Baghdad. Nimrod was the ringleader. He led people away from a patriarchal society where the natural head of the family was the recognized leader. And he built a kingdom, and he was the king, and he had in time 8 cities. Is there anything wrong with Nimrod building cities? Yes. Cities create problems, big problems, for which man has no solution. Increased crime, disease, racketeering, bribery, lust, adultery, political corruption, suicide, divorce, sexual immorality, juvenile delinquency, insanity, and generally a disregard for the worth of an individual. The story of every city is a horror story. Sin thrives in cities. The story of Nineveh, Babylon, Rome, Athens is the same as the story of New York, Los Angeles, Nairobi, London, Rio. The city stories are all the same. The city of brotherly love, same story. I looked up the crime statistics. Regardless of race, morals, religion, when men have congregated instead of scattering out as God told them to do, they degenerate. And that is still true, isn't it? What a privilege to live in a place like East Caddis. Population, 32. What an advantage in life I had. We had a schoolhouse. It had one room in it, and there was one teacher for 6 grades. There were 3 of us in my class, Don Hall and Peggy Case and me. Don had asthma, didn't come to school much. I was smarter than Peggy in math and spelling, which made me the valedictorian of my class. Not much crime around East Caddis. Good place to raise a family, to learn about God, to learn about morals, to learn about responsibility. Archaeologists describe a tower in Babylon that was 700 feet high. That's incredible. It did not reach heaven, but it was devoted to the heavens. Such towers had a worship center at the top, dedicated to the gods of the stars. On the ceiling were drawings of the constellations, the signs of the zodiac. and men bowing down to the stars, bowing down to the heavens. The land of Nimrod was the birthplace of astrology. Do you ever look at your horoscope in the newspaper? Why would you look? Do you believe in it a little bit? Is your faith in the stars or in the God who created all the stars with a simple command? Is your faith a little bit of both? The pagan religion of Nimrod, which defied God, is alive and well in the United States. And when our children were young, Carolyn and I learned from Ben Alexander about the dangers of astrology. And Carolyn and I did not let our children play with razor blades or poison or astrology. Poison in the mind is worse than poison in the stomach. The Hebrew language has the word Babel, which means confusion. Babel was a good name for the punishment that God brought on those people. This is amazing to me that God worked a miracle in the brains of people, the part of the brain that is the storehouse of information God dealt with, and he gave them different languages. God switched their vocabularies from the language of Adam and Eve to languages radically different from that. And the next day, at the tower project that they were building to heaven, everybody sounded like they were babbling. Our oldest son has a vivid imagination. He thinks here's what happened at the Tower of Babel. He thinks the next morning after the language switch, one fellow said, "Bring me a hammer." The other fellow just shrugged his shoulders and said, "No speak English," because he didn't understand what the man said. The first guy got mad and thought they were messing around with him, so he smacked the guy with a hammer. That led to a brawl. Before long, it looked like the Three Stooges. Eventually, totally confused by the weird sounds that everybody's making, they all gave up. They all went home to try to find somebody who spoke their language. The Tower Project was left unfinished. They did not succeed in making a name for themselves. They did not succeed in staying together in one place. Those who had the same language left the area to establish new homelands in other parts of the world, like God wanted, because God wanted what was best for all of them. And the best thing was not all living together on top of each other. Do you know how evolutionists explain man's many languages? They don't. They can't. They are mystified. They will say things like, "Well, we don't really know, but maybe, probably, it all started with grunting and barking." How about that for an insight? The only explanation of the origin of languages is what God did in Babylon. They told us when we were in elementary school about Neanderthal man. Do you remember the day you met Neanderthal man? Caveman. They told us he was a descendant of apes. When Noah's son Japheth and his people moved into Asia Minor in Europe, there wasn't anybody living there. When they got there, there was nobody home. It was a wilderness. When Ham and his descendants migrated into parts of Asia and on into Africa, they were pioneers in a wilderness or in a jungle. Gradually, people found their way into northern Europe and into the Western Hemisphere. They struggled against harsh environmental conditions, and of course, many people died. Noah's scattered descendants gathered wild fruit. They built crude shelters. They didn't have any tools. They used sticks and stones for tools. Some of those people knew construction. Some of them knew metallurgy, but they didn't have any raw material. And it took them quite some time, in some cases, out in this new world to find the raw materials. They knew how to harvest crops and how to raise herds, but they didn't have any. This tribal period of hunting and gathering in human history has been misinterpreted by evolutionary archaeologists. They found a skeleton in a cave in Germany, and they said, "He's Neanderthal." And they just named him. They said he came from apes. He wasn't Neanderthal. He didn't come from apes. He was Noah's grandson. He was Japheth Jr. And he had just migrated over there and was trying to find a way to live. They found this guy who was a descendant of Noah, who had had a very hard life, probably suffered from one of those diseases that tends to deform the body, like rickets or arthritis brought on by the rigors of a hard life in a hard world. Yeah, there were people who lived in caves. But not for a million years, like we're told. Just a few decades. and the race problem had begun. Ever since Babel, there have been walls that divide men. People called those who were different foreign, and they refused to associate with them. They distrusted them. They did not value or respect people who were foreign. They were foreigners. The rest of the Bible and the rest of history is full of men abusing each other, hating, killing, lying to each other. To anybody who's different, you don't owe him anything. He's different. And this alienation led to total separation, which led to inbreeding, which gradually caused the development of physical traits, which are now called races. But all of us are descendants of Noah, and we're all family, and there are no exceptions to that. Unbelieving anthropologists and other scientists consider the origin of the races an unsolved mystery. They agree that we all came from a common origin, but they cannot imagine how we got three primary races, light, dark, and in between. And of course, I don't know either, but I think I do. Have you ever been there? Have you been in those places where you don't know the answer, but you think you do? Noah had three sons. And when their descendants formed a union against God, God separated them into permanent, distinctive groups. And to this day, the best explanation for multiple human languages that are totally unrelated to each other is supernatural intervention. And by the way, it could be that Shem and his family did not follow in Nimrod's rebellion in the tower building. It could be that Shem's family was not affected by this confusion of languages at Babel. And if that's true, it is possible that the Hebrew language was the language of Noah and the language of Adam and Eve. But we don't know. Well, so what? What has all of that got to do with us? We will do well to admit that the race problem is a problem, that it is here, that the race problem permeates the American society and it creeps into our attitudes and into our behavior. A lady professor at Johnson County Community College in Smithfield, North Carolina, teaches night classes. Because she's out so much at night, her husband convinced her to carry a handgun in her purse for her protection. She carried the gun for 5 months without incident. Recently, after shopping at Wilson Mall, she returned to her car and found four young black men sitting in her car. She thought, what am I going to do? She yelled at them and told them to get out of her car, and they refused. She put down the packages and she said, out! And they just joked around with her. And she pulled the pistol out of her purse, and the car doors flew open and those four fellows ran into the night. She picked up her packages and noticed that her car, same year, same make, same model, was parked three spaces away. Did you ever jump to the wrong conclusion about other people? See, we're all here in our church learning to be Christians, but we were raised in America. The Bible says if we keep all of God's laws except one, and we break that one, we are guilty, we are lawbreakers, we stand condemned. Do you remember which law James was discussing when he said that? He said, as believers in our glorious Lord Jesus Christ, do not have an attitude of personal favoritism. James was saying, break this law, and you have broken God's law. You are a lawbreaker. James was saying, don't act like one man is less valuable than another man. If we keep all of God's other laws and treat one man as though he's worse than other men, we are guilty before God. Cardinal John O'Connor became Archbishop in New York City in 1985. He said he was walking in the city when he saw a black man approaching him. His thought was, what does that man want? Is he going to ask me for money? Is he going to rob me? The black man walked right up to O'Connor and reached out his hand and thanked him for the tremendous sermon that O'Connor had preached the week before. The following Sunday, the sermon was about not showing favoritism, and Cardinal O'Connor admitted that he had a ways to grow, as we all do. So, in dealing with the race issue, step one, we'll begin to solve the problem when we admit to ourselves it is a problem. Step two, it is God's will for us to treat people the way he treats people. In the land of Shinar, God disrupted their sinful behavior with new languages. He separated people, like parents sometimes separate children who are conspiring together to do nastier things than any one of them would do on their own. Do any of you parents ever think when your kids are arguing, I just wish I could confound their languages so they didn't even understand each other, and that would cause them to go their ways? At the Tower of Babel, God separated men for their own good. And ever since he had to do that, ever since that discipline, God has been working on putting the family back together. There are only two kinds of people. We talk about many races and many nationalities, many people groups, but there are only two people groups. God calls men out of darkness into his marvelous light. Once we were not a people, we were not a family, we did not know God was our father, but now we are his family. There are only two people groups, those who regard Jesus as Lord and those who don't. Jesus said, go into all the world, tell everybody the good news. He who believes and is baptized will be saved. Whoever does not believe will be condemned. Jesus himself is the line of demarcation. He made it as plain as it can be. Either we are on terms with God, good terms, through Jesus Christ, or we're not. Red and yellow, black and white, they are precious in his sight. Are they precious in your sight, in my sight? Well, of course, we all like little children. Little Chinese baby, little Oriental babies, precious, beautiful. We all like all the babies. That's not the issue here. The question is, what about when people grow up and their differences show and their different colors show and their different languages are prominent? Are they precious then? Are they valuable then? Do you care if they hear about the only Savior of sinners that there is? If your heart belongs to God, you care about them. If you don't care about them, you don't care about God. Step three, the final step that I would suggest to you in resolving racism is to work seriously at developing interracial relationships. Do you ever speak disrespectfully of people who are not like you? Don't tell racial jokes. Don't tell ethnic jokes. Don't do that. That's hurtful. That's wrong. Just don't. Draw a line and don't let that happen again. Let the walls fall down. Don't repeat the one about the two Polacks or the one about the two Italians or the one about the two black guys. If you hear a story that you think's funny and innocent and you want to tell somebody else to make them laugh, clean the story up. Don't ever say two Polacks went out in a boat. You know, change it. Say that Jim and Mike went out in a boat. You know, and that way, see, nobody gets hurt. Somebody might drown, but nobody gets hurt. Would you agree that it's way past time to let the walls fall down? Do I need to remind you that the foulest word in the English language, the ugliest word, the filthiest word in the English language is the N word? Standing here today in public with God as my witness, I beg you never to pronounce that word again in your life. Any man who says, I love God and hates his brother is a liar. In his love, no walls between us. In his love, a common ground. Let the walls fall down. A well-dressed white woman walked up to a nicely dressed black lady in a Kentucky church. The white woman said, what do you prefer that we call you? Black, Negro, Afro-American, what? And the other lady answered calmly and kindly, I prefer to be called Margaret. To make your life count for Christ in this divided world, get to know somebody who's not like you. Work at knowing someone who's not like you, and then treat them like you would treat Jesus. In the large church, there is no Jew, no Greek, no slave, no preferred few, no preferred color. We're family. I know a young married man who studied Spanish during his lunch hour. Why would he do that? Because there were a lot of Hispanic people who lived in his area, and he wanted to talk to them about the Lord, so he began studying Spanish during his lunch hour. He spent his money and gave up his lunch break to learn their language that he might build a relationship with people who were not like him. Will you develop some interracial relationships and make the world better? The Good Samaritan is famous. Do you know why? Because he helped another man instead of hating him because he was different. So here's my conclusion. The challenge you and I are facing is to take the love that is remembered here at this table every Lord's Day and take it out there into a broken, hurting world and to let them know we care, we respect them. Better to be blind than to see with prejudice. Better to live in a cave than in a city that defies God. Better to be mute than to joke at the expense of others who are different. Better to be on Jesus' side right now than to keep putting him off. I heard recently the three most loved expressions in any language. The three things that everybody likes to hear. And of course, you know the first one. I love you. And the second most popular expression that people love to hear is, I forgive you. And the third one, I would never have guessed. The third one is, dinner is ready. And Jesus said, I love you. And I want to forgive you. And come to my feast. The hymn that I've selected on page 513 has words I want you to sing with me, but this is not the tune that we're going to sing. The tune is back on page 68 in the hymnal, but it's the more popular tune, and so I've asked the accompanist to play the tune of page 68, but we're going to sing the words of 513. Will you stand, please, as we sing?